magical place we could go. So close your eyes and make a wish for the skies with the angriest, flappiest birds, and the seas with ridiculous fish. The Dutch Arcade Show is here again. It's Friday night and I'm with my friends Eli, Jared, and Mike most of the time. Mike, come on, let's go.
Hey, what is up? You are listening to the Touch Arcade Show, episode number 393. I am your host, Jared, and with me is Eli. For our regular listeners, that probably sounds a little bit backwards. I think we decided a couple of weeks ago that a person that actually works at Touch Arcade should be hosting the Touch Arcade Show, and the logic checked out with that. So,
logic, it checks out. Everything checks out.
Logic checks out.
Board here.
If you are not a regular listener, and this is somehow the first time you've ever listened to our show, this is the official podcast for TouchArcade.com, the absolute best mobile gaming website on the entire internet that has been fact-checked and proven through charts and graphs. And we cover everything iOS-related and into Android and even Nintendo Switch and beyond sometimes. So you can check us out at TouchArcade.com. Everything with the website that we do, including this podcast, is primarily supported through Patreon, which you can find at patreon.com/TouchArcade. And if you want to help us out additionally or just prefer not to do a Patreon sort of thing, you can do your Amazon shopping through TouchArcade.com/Amazon, and we'll get a little slice of whatever you buy from Papa Jeff Bezos. And instead of that money going into his pocket, it can go into ours a little tiny bit at a time. So anyway, we were out. No podcast last week. Apologies for that. And we were busy with GDC. It was kind of a hectic week, and we didn't really have anywhere good to record or any of that good stuff.
We also still both sort of left on Friday.
Yeah, we also left on Friday.
Did you get sick from GDC?
I got like almost sick like five times in a row. Like, you know, when you get, you're like, oh, here it comes, I'm getting sick, I have all these symptoms, and then it never turns into anything. That like happened to me multiple times in a row, but I never got full sick.
Yeah, I had the same thing happen where like I got like the day after GDC, I was like, oh man, I feel real shitty. And then like just slept a little bit more and it felt really good.
Yeah.
And then like that kept repeating until I got to PAX and like got like full on sick.
Yeah.
But it's actually sort of as weird as it sounds, it's like a weird relief to just show up at PAX sick.
Yeah.
Because like, I don't know, like when I come to these events, I'm always like all freaking out about like, oh my God, I gotta like I'm making my hands dry from hand sanitizer because I'm like so paranoid about getting like,
other, you know, the
convention plague and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But now like arriving sick, I'm like, man, I already am at rock bottom. I got, it's like, I don't know. Like remind me of, I don't remember the quote from Fight Club, you know, but it was like, you know, something along the lines of like, once you hit rock bottom, like, you know, it's just extremely liberating.
Oh, only when you've lost everything are you free to do anything.
Yeah, no, exactly. So now I'm just like, man, I'll touch all these dumb controllers. Like, I don't care. Like I'm already sick, whatever.
Yes, there's a sense of serenity in knowing that you're just patient zero instead of having to avoid getting sick.
Yeah. So. I mean, I'm a polite person, so I'm not like wiping my nose and then touching controllers and stuff, but it is weirdly liberating just to be like, hey, you know, whatever. Can't get more sick, I guess.
I imagine you cut back on the open mouth kiss greetings.
Well, you know, that is my preferred form of greeting someone in a business sense is a deep tongue French kiss.
Yeah. What a world it would be if that was the norm.
Oh my God.
So I guess if you haven't figured out, Eli went straight from GDC to PAX East this week.
Well, I had 2.5 days at home.
So, oh, okay.
Just, well, just enough time to do some laundry and that was about it.
Yeah. So we are on opposite coasts right now, fully.
Yeah, this is a coast to coast podcast.
Coast to coast. What's happening at PAX this week?
Well, it's pretty cool. It's you know, I really like PAX East, and like I always tell people that like if you're interested in the video game industry, and you know, if you look at stuff like E3 and are always like, oh man, I wish I could go to that. Well, I guess you can go to E3 now. E3 like is kind of open to the public, isn't it?
Sort of, yeah.
But PAX is an event that's like very much like enthusiast focused.
Yeah.
Like if you went to E3 as like if you got one of the limited kind of just, you know, like gamer passes or whatever they call it, their open to the public, like you're kind of somewhere where like, you know, you're not kind of really supposed to be, because like most of those demos are like, you know, like media people have time slots already booked all this other stuff. Whereas, you know, PAX is very much like, hey, welcome gamer people. What do you like? Do you like board games? Do you like card games? Do you like, you know, it doesn't matter. Like we got something for you.
If you go to E3, I feel like at least one solid day is just line waiting to play any games you might care about.
Yeah. Well, and that's true of PAX for sure. But I don't know. The vibe is totally different. It's like, I feel like if you went to a show like E3 or something like that, you would feel like a stowaway almost.
Yeah.
Whereas PAX is very much like, hey, everyone's welcome. Like, you know, whatever you're into, we got it here. It's really cool. And I used to tell people like, oh man, like don't bother going to the other PAXs. Like PAX Prime is where it's at. Like if you're going to go to the one in Seattle. But like, I don't know, like that one is like such a shit show.
Yeah.
That, like so many people go and like,
and
it's grown so big that they've not only taken over like the entire Washington State Convention Center, but like every meeting space in the hotels of like the surrounding 9 blocks.
Yeah.
Whereas PAX East is like just the Boston Convention Center, which is just this like huge, huge, huge open space. And, you know, it just everything flows really well. Cause like, you know, before it was like, oh, where are board games? They're on the second floor in these three rooms that are kind of together.
Yeah.
And I was
like,
oh, where's Magic being played? Oh, it's in the basement of the hotel across the street.
Yeah.
Whereas this is just
it was like a game to figure out how to get to where you want to go.
Yeah. Like the Boston Convention Center is just like one massive square. So like everything just kind of like takes place in the same space, which is pretty cool.
I like that a lot. I feel like all the PAXs, for a while it felt like these are just smaller spinoff PAXs from the main one. But now I feel like every PAX is like a main show. It's just in a different place.
Yeah, it did seem like they had that vibe for a while, because like PAX East originally was in like this conference center attached to like a mall in Boston here. And it was like, that was the first one I had gone to. And I just remember being like, this is kind of like weird.
Yeah.
Like it seems really small, and like it's really, really weird how it's in the middle of a shopping mall and all this stuff. But having been to a lot of the PAX events, I would say if you're going to go to one and you've never been before, I would say that PAX East might be a better experience than PAX Prime, just because it's like more cohesive, less busy, and the hotels aren't as expensive.
Interesting. I've only ever been to the PAX West Seattle one, so I'd love to go to a different PAX someday.
East is cool. I've never been to South, but Carter has good things to say about South. So
I'd go to South too, because Texas. I got to get to Texas.
Ran into Carter. He said, I'll tell you, he said hi. And I said,
hi.
I will not do that. And he said, okay, well, tell Jared that I said he sucks. And I was like, I will do that.
Oh, hi and thanks then. So that's cool. PAX's going on. And then, I guess the big thing that happened this week in the world of mobile gaming was Apple had an event and broke the internet by announcing something called Apple Arcade.
That wasn't the only announcement, though. I mean, I feel like we could run through the more boring ones real quick just for the sake of...
Sure. Do you like magazines? Because Apple News Plus now has magazines.
I was kind of surprised by this one because, like, the Apple News experience is so good. But, the Apple News Plus experience is, like... the reason I never really got too into magazines on my iPad was because like they never really felt like they were formatted for the iPad. You know, it was like, okay, here's a bunch of PDFs you can kind of like page through, and you got to like do awkward zooming and stuff.
Yeah.
And I was really excited for the News Plus thing, thinking that like, oh shit, well, this is going to be like the content of 300 magazines, but like formatted like Apple News.
Yeah.
And it's not. It's you just get access to an absurd amount of PDFs.
Yeah, I think somebody did the math, one of the tech people out there, but it's like something like 100 of the 300 are formatted in that like fancy format that has like moving pictures and stuff like that. Yeah, which I think the coolest thing about that is that it makes a lot of sense for iPhone viewing. And I thought it was kind of surprising they even demoed. The first demo they did of it was on an iPhone, showing like, hey, reading magazines on your iPhone can be really cool.
Yeah.
Which makes a lot of sense to me as somebody that doesn't really use an iPad all that often. But I do enjoy magazines. And I think, you know, I used to buy them in the grocery store all the time, just browsing and be like, cool, a game magazine or a skateboard magazine or whatever. And like, I can't remember how many years it's been since I've bought a magazine. So yeah, like,
I'm curious which ones have like the enhanced experience. Cause
yeah,
the ones I went through, which admittedly I'm into pretty weird niche shit, so it's not super surprising, but they were all like PDFs.
Yeah. I also think that if this sort of thing takes off and does well for everyone involved, more magazines will make the effort of being like, hey, we got to have this really cool like digital experience now, so let's get on that instead of like scan our pages into an app.
I'm really curious to hear like how the actual like pay model works, like going back to the magazine people, because like, you know, if you're magazines have gotten weirdly expensive. Like I remember when we were doing the collaboration with EGM, like I tried to buy every EGM that we had articles in and they, I think that magazine was like 10 or 12 bucks or something like that.
Yeah. They have to be nowadays. Cause
like every time I bought it, every time I bought it, I was like, okay. But like 10 bucks a month for like a bazillion magazines. Yeah. Like, does that mean like if EGM was in there, which it might be, look, like, do they get like, if they're the only magazine I read that month, do they get like the bulk of my subscription?
I don't know. I feel like there's been some nothing really like specified about how the payment things are going down, but I think it's been rumored that it's like a, well, you know, if everyone's viewing the LA Times, they're going to get the most of the money or something like that.
Yeah. I'm kind of torn on that because like I like the convenience of this kind of thing, but like, you know, having been done Touch Arcade for 10 years, like I know exactly how hard like all forms of media are hurting. Yeah. And like, you know, if like the weird niche magazines I read are, you know, like if they go from like getting 10 bucks from me to like, you know, 75 cents as part of like the massive, you know, subscription pool, like I'd almost rather just like keep buying the physical version because
I would also wonder how much middleman cost is into that 10 bucks for a physical copy of something too.
That's true.
But you know, if you look at something like Spotify or Apple Music or, you know, whatever, the artists are making basically nothing. So I feel like we're probably going down that road with all the other content that's going that route.
Yeah. It's unfortunate. So I don't know. I think it's cool. I want to see where it goes, but like, most importantly, I just want to like make sure that it doesn't turn into a Spotify thing where it's like, I don't remember which Spotify artist, had got like, there was some band or musician that like tweeted something that got retweeted like a bazillion times where it's like, my song's been played 3 million times on Spotify and I just got my check for $1,500.
Yeah.
Something like that. You
that
know?
Was Peter Frampton. Yeah.
That's exactly right. So I don't know. And then the TV stuff, like I don't know that also was kind of weird to me, but I feel like I've hit kind of, I mean, we've talked about this before and that I think we both agree that we've kind of hit like a saturation point with like how many more things can you really watch?
Yeah.
You know, and
well, I think, first of all, like just from a presentation standpoint, everyone agreed that it was just a bizarre event once all the TV stuff started happening. And they kind of brought, you know, the famous celebrity people, directors and actors and stuff like that, that they've hired over the last year or two to come on and do original shows for Apple, came on and kind of like pitched their shows, which I thought was kind of weird. There was no like actual trailers from the shows besides like a kind of a quick sizzle reel sort of thing. And I don't know, part of that I thought was kind of interesting. And part of it I thought was just sort of dumb that they devoted so much time to that.
Yeah.
You could tell they were really thinking they were trying to make like a big impact with this sort of thing. And I'm not totally sure that it worked. But I will say that, like, I think some of the original shows that they have planned sound interesting enough that, you know, I'm down to like try them out and see if they're shows I like. But I also feel like you really just need like trailers and stuff for that to really determine if something's going to be something you're interested in.
And this kind of like dovetails into the actual Apple Arcade stuff. And that like my takeaway from this whole announcement was kind of like, man, this just feels like too early compared to like what Apple usually does, you know, like the magic of Apple and like why I always kind of fell in love with them as a tech company was that, you know, so often in the world of, I'm not even really necessarily limited to just tech companies, but like in the world of announcements for, you know, product services, you name it, yeah. It's like, hey, we're working on this cool thing. It's coming next year. And yeah. You're like, okay, well, I'm excited for it now. Yeah. And waiting this long really sucks. Yeah. And, you know, compared to like the way that Apple's always done things, which is like, hey, here's the new iMac. You can buy it tomorrow.
Right, right. Yeah.
Or whatever, you know, which like, so this was like uncharacteristically weird.
Well, their yeah. Apple News Plus did launch immediately, and it's been like pretty broken for a lot of people too.
Well, right. Like that's what I'm saying. So like the Apple News Plus, I feel like could use a bit more time in the oven. The Apple, what is their movie service called? Apple TV Plus?
TV right? Plus, I think, yeah.
That just like, I feel like it would have been so much more impactful if it was like, hey, I'm Steven Spielberg. Like I'm working on this new, TV series, like check out this trailer and, you know, like a 90-second thing. Yeah. So everyone would be like, oh, that looks amazing. Instead of, you know, like the Aquaman guy coming out and being like, imagine a world where you're blind. Well, that's how this TV show is. Nope. Or whatever. And I was just like, okay. And like, admittedly, the Apple Arcade announcement was the best, I feel like, but even then, you know, it was like this like really hot sizzle reel, and then like coming fall, no further details.
Yeah, that's the killer for me is the details thing. I feel like that whole event leading up to it was a lot of people had a lot of questions about a lot of things, and very few of them actually got answered, and it probably even created more questions about all of their services, you know, plans. But the Apple Arcade stuff,
which is like, again, it's like so characteristically on Apple, you know, like it seems like after they do like the iPhone keynote, aside from like, you know, like all the shit you actually learn from like the teardown stuff, you know, like how many milliamp hours the battery is and all that stuff. Like very rarely do you ever walk away from one of those keynotes being like, oh, I wonder, you know, how much talk time the phone has, or I wonder what like screen size it is or whatever. You know, it's like they tell you everything you need to know. Yeah. Which is, I don't know, strange.
It is very weird. But yeah, I everyone kind of seemed to agree that the Apple Arcade stuff was seemed like the most fully baked part of that whole keynote. And basically what it is what had been rumored for the last few months, if not longer, is sort of a Netflix for games, for mobile games, where you'll pay a subscription fee monthly to have access to, starting with over 100 different mobile premium mobile games. And I feel like on paper, everything about this sounds super awesome. And when you think about, you know, the people that actually track down like the premium games and kind of ignore the premium stuff and are really kind of hardcore gamers or whatever, you're spending more than $10 a month easy. You know what I mean? Even on just like a few different titles, if you buy 3 or 4 in a month, which is, you know, easy to do, you've probably spent more than $10. So I feel like if it ends up being $10 a month, which they haven't announced the actual price yet, but I feel like it would be
weird. I mean, everything else is $10 a month, right?
It would be weird if it was more. I think the only option would be it might be less, or might be less as part of a package with their other stuff or something like that. But I'm just kind of assuming that it's going to be $10 a month. And so, you know, the value proposition is there. If you're the kind of person that's hunting out at least a handful of paid games per month, then you're getting more than your money's worth here with over, you know, 100 different games to play.
Yeah.
And it's like a really interesting mix of games that they've shown off. Like, they've definitely courted kind of like all the popular cool indie devs, that a lot of the games are ones that have been previously shown and announced and have been in the works for a while.
Well, and are on other platforms too. Like,
yeah, some of them are going multi-platform. And some of them seem like they might be actually original to just Apple Arcade, at least for now. So yeah, on paper, it all sounds really cool. And I think it's a, you know, if consumers can get over their sort of like hatred of the subscription model, which you hear a lot from people in the gaming space, that
I can't wrap my head around that though. I mean, I just feel like, I mean, don't get me wrong. We definitely have talked about like subscription fatigue, but that for me like comes in from like when I'm subscribing to like a ton of different things that are providing me a similar kind of content. You know, like for me, it's like, you know, Netflix, Hulu, HBO. I think we subscribed to like one other one that I don't remember. Like with those four services, like I feel like I'm like capping out on like a fifth video service. But like, you know, I don't know. There's a lot of room in games, I think, for, I mean, cause like, so I subscribe now to, the EA Origin stuff on PC, the, Xbox Game Pass on Xbox, the, Nintendo Switch, online stuff, I guess counts as a subscription. And then, you know, Apple Arcade too. So that's four. But like those, I feel like it's easier to tack on like game subscriptions because like the experience is so different across like, you know, like the, it seems hard to even compare like the Xbox Game Pass to like Apple Arcade.
Yeah. And I feel like, you know, going back a decade or so or more since like Gamefly started to become a thing, which I don't know how great the experience is with Gamefly or whatever. I mean, I feel
Did you not use it back in the
day? I've never used Gamefly, but I remember
shockingly good.
Oh, really? See, I've always heard kind of like negative things, like it was hard to get, you know, the popular brand new games, but it was pretty awesome if you want to go through backlogs.
That definitely was true.
Yeah. But like, you know, or things like Redbox or whatever, but like, you know, the idea that like, okay, a game costs $60 and a season pass costs, you know, 20, 30, whatever, and DLC and blah, blah, blah. And so like one single game could be like $100 and when all is said and done. And that's almost like a year's worth of like Xbox Game Pass. You know what I mean? So I feel like both on consoles, the game subscription services that have happened already, I feel like the value proposition is super there. I feel like the problem is that people, especially gamers, just don't like change. And so they're like, look, I like to buy my games one at a time. I like to like, quote unquote, own them or whatever. And not having that feels weird to them. And I kind of get it. Like I fear change in a lot of things too, but I feel like we always eventually come around. And so I feel like this whole subscription gaming model thing, if it ends up becoming popular and sticks around for a while, you know, in 5 years, nobody's really going to trip on it anymore. It'll just be normal and there won't be a million hot takes about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, me personally, like I like the subscription kind of all you can eat thing just across the board.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of like, you know, like the, I keep going back to the video thing because I feel like it's such a good example because like, I just like cannot watch all the content that I have access to.
Right.
But I think it's like, it's definitely exposed me to other stuff that I wouldn't have messed with otherwise.
For sure.
Particularly with Spotify. I mean, like if you look at like, you know, your ability to kind of like explore a bunch of different pieces of music.
Yeah.
Like I listen to like Spotify recommends me playlists all the time and I'm like, oh, this sounds insane, but yeah, sure.
Yeah.
You know, like most recently I listened to this like weird, like chill EDM playlist that was shockingly good. And it's like, I have never listened to that kind of thing before. And like, if we were back in an era of buying albums at Best Buy, like I would never be like, oh hell yeah, give me this $15 CD for this like, you know, chill EDM mix. Like that's not something I've ever really done. So
from
that perspective, like I think the games as a service subscription thing is really cool because it's like all the best parts about free to play, which is like you know, no risk, just play whatever looks interesting to you or whatever else And you know, if you like it, I guess spend some money in it without like that other half where it's like you've already spent money for access to this, so just enjoy it kind of thing. Yeah. Like if you don't like it, all right, cool, play the next one. Like that to me is really neat. And that really taking advantage of Game Pass and EA Origin for that too.
I think as gamers, that's something we've all felt before too, where it's like you're excited for something, you don't even wait for reviews, you go spend your $60 and you get home and you're like, I just don't like this. Like it's not a good game, whatever. And you feel like that crappy feeling of you just wasted money or whatever. So the ability to actually try out full games and know what you're spending a month and have like, you know, this huge library of stuff to try, like you said, it could really open doors to new genres and things you wouldn't normally try because you're scared to, you know, waste your money or whatever.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's definitely been the case with like the weird indie games that pop up on, Microsoft Game Pass. Like there's like so many of those indie games come out that like people say are cool, and I'm just like, man, I just like no, I don't have time to play that, and I'm not gonna, you know, spend just $20 on it just for fun. Although I do that a lot. Yeah, but it's been really cool, like being able to be like, oh, I got nothing to do on a Saturday afternoon. Oh, I heard this game's cool. Like, let me just download it. Like, this is neat.
Yeah.
So from that aspect, I think that like Apple Arcade is going to be just like a slam dunk for like, you know, zero risk aside from, you know, your monthly subscription. Kind of, you know, look at cool games.
So going back to not having enough details, this is where I think Apple Arcade has started to kind of fall apart for me, is that, you know, so Game Pass does it really well to where you pay the $10 a month or whatever, have access to all these games while they're around. Because games come and go, right? Like, games will leave Game Pass.
Yeah, they do. I don't, like, so I don't really play enough Xbox to know, like, the cadence of how stuff comes and goes. But like,
I know that's the case, too, with, like, Netflix and Hulu and stuff like that. It's like, oh, well, Netflix is losing whatever, and it's going to Hulu or whatever.
And I kind of like that, though. I mean, it's kind of like I can see how people can be annoyed by that, but like, it's really neat to have a library that's not this like static thing. And like, because I saw some tweet being like, you know, I think it was Tomb Raider. Tomb Raider's coming to Game Pass next month, and like these six games are leaving. I was like, oh shit. Well, like, let me. Those are the ones I'll play this weekend. Then. Play. As opposed to like, before I was going, I don't know. I can play them or not play them, whatever.
What I think Game Pass does that's really smart too is that it gives you the ability to buy any of those games outright for a discount, like a 10% discount, I think. And so if you're playing something and you're like, damn, I like this and I know I'm going to want to play it, you know, 5 years from now or whatever, I'm going to, you know, get a lot more out of it and I want to own it. You can do that, and you can do that for a little discount, which I think is cool. And that's kind of one of the big questions with Apple Arcade is like, okay, so you're subscribing and you have access to all these games, but how do you have access to them? And can you buy them outright? And can you like own them if you want to stop subscribing but keep playing certain games or whatever? And I feel like all signs are kind of pointing to no to all of that. I think it's going to be you subscribe, you have access to the games, you stop subscribing, you can't play the games anymore. And it'll probably keep your save data and stuff like that. So if you resubscribe ever, you won't like lose your progress. But I don't believe you're going to be able to be like, oh, I really like Oceanhorn 2. That's really the only game I care about in this, so I'd rather just buy this and cancel my subscription. I don't think you're going to be able to do that sort of thing.
Yeah, everything that I've read about it, like it seems like reading between the lines when they talk about like only available on Apple Arcade, like that to me directly means like the only way you can get this is if you're in the subscription thing.
Yeah, that's what I feel too.
Like, so I wonder though, like, so presumably these games that are thrown in it, like, you know, like most publishing agreements have like some kind of like after, you know, X years, like, okay, you're out now, you know, you get the IP back and you own the game again and all this stuff.
Yeah.
Like, so, and again, this is getting deep into speculative territory. I have no idea like how this is going to work out or if this is even going to be a problem with Apple Arcade, but like, so if they have something like that where, you know, it's a very standard kind of publishing clause. We hear that from developers all the time. Like, that's how they got their game back from, you know, like Publisher X or whatever. Cause it was like, oh, you know, it's 5 years and they just gave it back to us.
Yeah.
So if you're a subscriber to Apple Arcade and say, you know, like you're playing, you know, let's say just like Oceanhorn 2, cause we were talking about that. And like after 5 years, they get the game back. Like, do you then need to buy it again? Like,
I would think so. Yeah.
I mean, it just, I don't know. It's like, I wish they would have gotten into more details about all that.
Yeah. I'm sure that sort of stuff is coming, but it's hard to really form much of an opinion on all this too, with these unknown factors. And I think the other big thing, just besides my questions about how you access the games and whatever, the other big question everyone's been kind of asking is how developers are going to get paid. And I think that's a super valid thing,
super curious
too, because we already know that Apple's helping funding a lot of the development for a lot of these games. And, you know, based on like kind of the blockbuster names they had and kind of like the huge number of really big name games and game creators they have on board already, I assume they've probably spent the last year just backing their dump truck of money up to anybody that they can think of, and just pouring money at them to get them on the service so they can make a big splash or whatever. And so that's cool. And like, I think that's great. And I think it's awesome that a lot of these developers, hey, maybe this game wouldn't be able to get made if Apple didn't step in and kind of help out with it or whatever. And so that's all a good thing to me. But what's going to happen with the long term? How are people going to be making money on this service, you know, long term after, you know, Apple's, you know, put their portion in to create the game? Now the game's out there. Are they going to be getting a good amount of return on that or not? And so I think that's kind of the next biggest question with Apple Arcade is how the developers are going to get paid long term and how sustainable is this? Because Apple's got a lot of money, but they're not going to just keep backing up trucks of money to people over and over to keep making games for Apple Arcade. You know what I mean? There has to be a certain point where it needs to be sort of self-sustaining for developers and has to be, you know, something that they think they can make enough money on their own just being on the service. Otherwise, why wouldn't you just release a game like normal or even avoid mobile and avoid all of the exclusive stuff or whatever and put your game on Switch? This is what we've been seeing happen for the last year or two with a lot of, you know, previously mobile games just going to Switch instead. So
I'm really curious about the sustainability of this, because like when you look at the history of gaming in general, like no company that has taken the approach of like, we're just going to pull a dump truck of money up to every single person and just give them a bunch of cash to like create a platform has ever really worked out. I mean, like most recently that happened with Oculus, because they were doing the whole thing where they were like, basically anyone that was capable of making a game in VR, they pulled their dump truck in front of their office and just gave them as much cash as they wanted.
Right.
And it seemed like, you know, reading the various like post-mortem articles on like Gamma Sutra and stuff like that, like a lot of those games like either didn't come out and they kept the money, or they came out and they sucked, or they came out and they like didn't sell. And now, you know, like that whole thing is just kind of like gone away because it's not a super viable business. But I guess like where Apple's wild card is though, like I feel like they could write off an absurd amount of money potentially spent in this program if they do some like fuzzy accounting and are like, oh well, this, you know, technically is part of like the iPhone marketing budget, and like all we really care about is like selling more devices. So if we spent $100 million on games this year, but we increased, you know, iPhone and iPad sales like 0.75%, like we made way more than we put into this, or you know, whatever.
Or if it's if this gaming service is just another pillar of their, you know, theoretical bundle that they might roll out or whatever, they might just care about getting people into the bundle and sweetening the pot with more service types or whatever. so yeah, I don't know. I think it is the one different thing from the VR stuff, I think, is that everybody's already got an iPhone in their pocket, and so it's not like, well, you know, I have to run out and spend $1,000+ on, you know, the specialty equipment too. And so, you know, Apple sold 1 billion devices, they say, or whatever. So you're kind of instantly getting inserted into a potential customer pool of 1 billion people, which is kind of interesting too. So maybe, you know, it doesn't have to be like wildly successful for a lot of devs to make money on it. Maybe it's just, you know, the power of numbers here. Like, you know, when the 99 cent games would take off and sell 2 million copies in a week or whatever, and suddenly that solo dev is rich. Maybe something similar will happen with this whole Apple Arcade thing, just because of the amount of users that are out there.
Yeah. Well, so a lot of the way that a lot of these subscription services work, as far as I know, I'm aware of, at least like on the PC side, is they basically just like give the developers a flat fee. You know, it's like, hey, let me get, you know, game X, we'll give you Y dollars. And most developers are like, oh, fuck, yeah, sure, that sounds great.
Right.
But I'm super curious how the business side of this works for Apple, because, like, I don't know. It's just, it's a interesting situation to think, like, and admittedly, this is kind of an absurd example, but, like, what if, you know, what if that's what Apple's doing here, is the same thing as, like, everyone else in the subscription world is like, all right, yeah, here's, you know, X million dollars for this game, like just put on a thing, that's all you get. And like, you know, Minecraft was a Apple Arcade game or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and like,
you'd be pretty bummed.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's a weird situation. I just really wish they would have like gotten into any more of the nuts. I mean, this even could have just been like an FAQ on their website, you know, that just answers some more of these questions. Cause I feel like people are just going to drive themselves crazy, us included, speculating on like the nuts and bolts of Apple Arcade until it's finally announced, you know, officially.
Another rumor as to this is that they're going to use a similar model like we were just talking about, where developers got paid based on the amount of time people spent playing their particular game. And I don't think this can be true, because if it is, it's just such a bad idea. But I mean, I think there's merit to that, to like what you're saying is like, okay, well, if I'm the guy that made the next Minecraft that's on Apple Arcade, and then this guy over here made the fart app that's, you know, nobody's playing that or whatever, why are we getting paid the same? But I also think if you're generally looking at analytics that are like, how long does somebody spend inside a game? That's a bad metric to judge like the quality of a game, because Florence would be, you know, a game you can beat in 45 minutes. That's also just a phenomenal game. Where does that leave something like that? And then you open the door for people, which if you've grown up a gamer, you've know this practice very well, where they're artificially inflating the playtime. Because back in the day, when you're going to go drop $50 on your next Super Nintendo game, you wanted to get your money's worth, and developers knew that. So they would tack on another 80 hours to a 20 hour game, so they could say that it had 100 hours, you know what I mean? Which isn't all that fun. You know, we've talked a lot of times about like, I'd rather play like a really solid, focused 3 hour game than like a bloated 20 hour game to feel like I got my money's worth. You know, I just want the game itself to be good. And so I feel like you're opening the door for people to be like, oh, okay, well, my 3 hour game just turned into a 30 hour game because we're going to backtrack across this map 30 times and I'm going to add a million fetch quests. And so hopefully people will spend the most time in it now or whatever.
I feel like they can't do that, because like the problem is like, if that's how this goes, like wave two of Apple Arcade games are going to be like the most grindy backtracky games on the
planet. You're almost inviting exactly what's made free-to-play popular, which is like, okay, how much time can we get people to spend in our apps, our daily active users, all those sort of dumb metrics that drive free-to-play games. You're sort of bringing that into these premium games where that sort of stuff doesn't really work anyway. Wave 2 would just be a bunch of fetch quest games or something really terrible. You know, the text will roll out really slow in an RPG or something like that, so you're just forced to read it, you know, letter by letter.
That is really a kind of interesting thing to think about, is like if you're incentivized as a developer to make your game go as slow as possible, you could probably really do the math on like, hey, if we make the text go just like, you know, a quarter of a second slower for like each text box, like we'll make, you know, X dollars more just on this game.
I guess that,
which seems
the only risk you run with like something like that on mobile is that you're like a home button away from somebody just not caring anymore. And there's so many games on mobile. I can't tell you how many times I've been like, this tutorial is just taking too long. I'm out. Bye-bye game. I got other games. So it's a fine line, I'm sure. But I really don't think that'll end up being the thing. I think it'll be more like a flat fee with additional, you know, bonuses based on like performance, not necessarily time in game, but maybe like amount of downloads and you know, and number of installs and like time that people actually spent playing it or something like that. So, you know, if a million people downloaded Florence and played it for an hour, then you know that they probably played the whole game. But if a million people downloaded Oceanhorn and played it for an hour, they probably did not. And that probably means that, you know, nobody really liked the game or something like that. So I think there's ways you can view those sort of analytics stuff in ways that make sense and award developers based on that. But I hope it's not purely just time played, some sort of basic analytic thing, because that's just going to be bad.
I mean, like my concern with this overall is that like just Apple has not made the greatest decisions when it comes to like creating good gaming ecosystems on iOS, you know, which is like why the App Store is in the state that it is. So like, however this actually works out from a like back end perspective, like I just really hope that they've spent a lot of time thinking about like, all right, like what could happen if we make it this way? All right, like what's the worst case scenario if someone really abuses this? Like, you know, and like just really like, I don't know, like it sounds like buzzwordy, but just like really like think take it to like the absolute extreme.
Yeah.
Of like, all right, what does this look like 10 years from now if this is how you know, the pay model works or whatever.
Right.
And like what happens to these games when we do like, I don't know, like go to 128-bit processors or whatever. Like, is it on us to develop them? Do they just all go away? Like,
That's even more and more questions is what happens, you know, who's updating those games? And if somebody's making new money on something released on Apple Arcade, are they then obligated to have to update it for some iOS change or something like that? Or can they tell Apple, like, sorry, you know, it's not worth my time or money anymore, unless you want to give me money to do it or whatever. I mean, they're really stepping into a publisher role here.
Yeah, I just wish they had FAQ.
Well, I think I think we're going to find out more at WWDC in a couple of months. So that's good, I guess. Like, I'm sure that they'll talk more, and I'm sure that they'll kind of unleash, you know, more developer tools for people that want to get in on the next wave of stuff. They've already posted sort of like an application process for people that want to be part of Apple Arcade. And so I feel like WWDC is going to have some more answers to this sort of thing. But beyond that,
I'm
it's
really
like
curious.
Fall is a long ways away to wait to figure out how all this stuff is going to go. And it's a sucky long time to wait for to play these games that look awesome. That's what really sucks for me is like a lot of these games that I've known about, I've waited for a long time for. And now it's like, well, now I got to wait for fall. And then a lot of the newer games, I'm like, holy crap, that looks awesome. Well, fall, not so far away. We just are hitting spring. So whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It's, it's an interesting thing. Like, I just think if they're able to corral 100+ games for a fall launch, like they will have done something that like very few platforms that have launched have ever been able to do, which kind of like makes me worried that like the fall date is super optimistic.
Yeah, that's true too.
Well, I guess we'll see. So here's my question. Like, do you think that this got thrown in at the last minute because of the Google Stadia announcement?
I don't know. I thought it was weird how many people were comparing this to the Google thing because they're totally different things. But maybe, I mean, possibly, I don't know. I feel like the presentation, was more well thought out than just like scrambling to throw it together in like a week. But then again, they've probably been working behind the scenes on this a long time, and maybe we're going to announce it at WWDC and decide to push it up a couple months. I mean, that could be realistic too. But I also think that this was probably in the cards, at least initially announcing it all along, because this was their big services coming out party. You know what I mean? Them saying, hey, we're going hard into services and here's what we have. So I think it would have been announced.
But from like a detail perspective, like it seems like even like we know more about like the Apple TV Plus and we know about Apple Arcade, you know, it just seems odd. I don't know. And yeah, like the comparisons between like the Google Stadia and Apple Arcade, like they just kind of seem absurd to me. Like sure, you'll be able to stream games on, you know, like a presumably only an Android device, but like, is the experience going to be good? Like, I don't know, like OnLive on the iPad was all right.
Right.
You know, it wasn't like, I mean, it was okay, but you know, like all the latency from like, you know, Wi-Fi and stuff like that, like really adds up when you're, you know, trying to hit like that super fast response time that people have come to expect in games. Yeah. So like, I don't think the experience is even going to be comparable, you know, like streaming a Stadia game onto an Android phone versus like playing an Apple Arcade game, like rendered locally on your device. So it really seems like an apples and oranges thing.
It really is. I'm trying to, I don't know if people were just throwing that name out there because it was Google's new announcement and it mixes well with an Apple headline or something. But I feel like the stronger comparison is to something like Game Pass. I mean, this is like not a streaming game service like Google's. This is literally like a game premium game subscription service. So they just seem so different to me that comparing them seems really dumb.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I'm super, super excited for it. I think more than anything else, like from looking at the list of games that have been like revealed so far, I mean, like I'm sure the exclusive titles that Apple, you know, paid for the development of will be cool. Yeah. But like what I'm more interested in is like, how often have we seen games that are like, you know, these really cool indie games that are like, would perfectly work on mobile, but you know, there's just like no money for
right.
it.
Right. Yeah.
Like Overland's a really good example of that. It's like that's a game that, you know, if we were back in 2011 or so, like it would just have launched right. on mobile. But without Apple Arcade, it's like, there's no fucking point of even launching on here. Cause you know, 15 people are going to buy it right. for $10 and everyone else is going to be playing. So that's pretty cool. And I'm really curious to see like how this kind of evolves, because so there's like two ways of thinking on this. Like, is Apple going to like keep writing checks to people to like get these games that wouldn't have been on the App Store otherwise into Apple Arcade? Or are they just doing that now because they want to hit like the 100 game launch catalog, you know, and just kind of needed to do that because you can't spool up 100 game studios in 9 months or whatever, you know? So moving forward, do you think it's going to be this split of two, or do you think that in a perfect world, Apple is going to be like, no, everything is going to be 100% exclusive to us and we'll fund it?
I don't know. I guess it's going to depend on the success of the subscription. And if a lot of people are subscribing and devs are making good money, then it might make sense. I mean, I'm sure you can do some napkin math about like, okay, well, we've spent this much on development, this much time. And, you know, originally we were going to launch on Steam and Switch and then, you know, mobile like 9 months later or something like that for kind of some extra, you know, extra income after the initial wave of buzz from being a real game on a console has left or whatever. You know, the tactic that we've been saying for a long time now is kind of the way to go. And so I'm curious if Apple's checks are maximizing what they can figure that they would make going that route. And if they're okay with that, being like, well, Apple paid me this much and there's no way I was going to make that even across all platforms. So I don't mind being Apple exclusive, whatever. It's I made my money that I was hoping to make. You know, I guess barring it becoming the next Minecraft incident or something like that, then you'd probably be pretty happy with that. So I don't know.
I think honestly, what we really need is a time machine to go forward about like a year and a half when we get like the first scathing postmortem from some developer that like didn't make as much money as he thought he should have or whatever, that just kind of like completely spills the beans on like exactly what the contracts look like. And because that'll happen. To, you know, that always happens.
I would love to know those details. And I also think that there's something to be said for Apple having a team in place that is curating this stuff, and I assume is also very hand in hand with the development of a lot of these titles too. I think Apple's going to have kind of a higher standard of quality for what they expect from these games too, so that you can't just fart out something and, you know, hope it does okay or whatever, that they're going to be like, look, if we want you on our service, we want you to be like a good game.
I mean, the value proposition is going to vanish if like, all of a sudden, like they went from like 100 really good games to like, all right, there's 100 really good games and like 500 like kind of sort of all right games.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like imagine if Nintendo released like an all you can eat thing for like the Nintendo DS, you know, and like advertised like, oh, we got 3,500 games, but you only actually want to play 15 of them.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. I guess we'll see. I'm super, I can't wait for that postmortem to go up, and I'm really excited to see kind of like what happens next with all this. I just like don't think we're going to get more details at WWDC though, because like historically, like WWDC is like where they're like, hey, here's the, you know, new App Store thing that we built for developers. Like everything is so developer centric typically. Yeah. And like, I don't think that they can really open this program up that
much. That's true too.
I don't know. I guess we'll
it's
see.
It's gonna suck balls to have to wait till fall to find out anything.
I know.
I mean, maybe at the next iPhone event they'll announce what the subscription will cost.
I mean, that's what makes me wonder if like this is all building towards like the next iPhone and iPad are just gonna have like bananas GPUs in them. Yeah. Because like presumably Apple knows like what's gonna be inside the next processor, you know?
Absolutely.
So it almost makes you wonder if they weren't like, shit, dude, like, what are we on now? The A12, right? A12X or something?
Yeah.
So if they're like, oh my God, dude, the A13, like, we cracked this thing to figure out how to get, like, a, you know, just absurd GPU in it. And, like, we need games that show this off.
That could be, too.
And so let's, like, spool up this thing. So who knows? Like, maybe the next you know, set of iPhones and iPads will just be like off the chain as far as graphical power is concerned. I guess.
Yeah. Would you, what would happen if this all comes out and it's all amazing and all gaming becomes like cool on mobile? Would that just blow your mind? The drum we've been beating for 10 years finally happens. I don't know if I'd be happy or sad. Like,
yeah, I think it would be equally really cool and really annoying.
Yeah, totally.
As people are like, oh my God, do you know you play these awesome games on your phone? Like, oh shit, this phone had my
another interesting this whole
time. You play all this cool stuff on it?
Another weird thing about this is that, so this is, Apple Arcade is going to be across iPhone, iPad, and Apple TV, all three.
And Mac.
Oh, and Mac, yeah. And so that I think is a really interesting thing too, because for one, we've talked before about how Apple has botched their having Apple TV be like a game console thing. Like, it's a very niche thing at best that I think could have been a way bigger success had they put any more effort or thought into making it more of a gaming machine instead of just like has apps now. And so maybe this is their take two at that sort of thing. If they make their own controller, or if they officially crown like an official type of controller from a third party or something like that, or start doing a bundle with an Apple TV and a controller, and maybe that controller works with your Mac too or whatever. That could really be a big boost to, like, you know, living room gaming, for especially younger kids that are already playing mobile games that, you know, their parents don't want to spend $500 on a console or something. You know, that's a huge value right there, being like, well, this $10 a month thing, little Jimmy or little Jane gets their games on their phones and their iPads and on the Apple TV, and that keeps them happy or whatever. And it's a huge boost for Mac gaming too.
I'm glad you brought this up, because like, it's actually something I forgot about, because like my thoughts when like I heard that it was going to be completely cross-platform across like not only Apple TV but also Mac, like, kind of makes me wonder, like is the result of this going to be that like all these games, because like when you think about it, like you play games on your phone vastly different from how you play them on your iPad typically, which is vastly different from how you play them on a TV, which again is like completely different from how you play them on the PC. Yeah. So like, are we going to be in this, like, is Apple Arcade going to exist in this like weird world where like, because everything has to be playable on everything, like there's no one best experience? Yeah.
I don't know. part of me thinks that they look at like all the stuff that's the most popular free to play stuff is like the games that work really well as like a on the go, I only have a few minutes free mobile games. You know what I mean? And I think they want that to continue being that way. But then I think they recognize that there's a lot of people out there that look at mobile gaming as like, you know, it doesn't have to fit in, you know, my 5 minutes at the bus stop. Sometimes I want to sit on my couch for 5 hours and play through a really interesting game like I do with my 3DS or my Switch or, you know, whatever. And so it could be that, because you wouldn't want to play like, you know, I don't know, Cookie Clicker or something like that on like your Mac or like on your Apple TV even or whatever, you know what I mean? But you don't mind blowing a few minutes, killing time doing stuff like that on your phone when you have it. So they're super different experiences, but I'm hoping that they're kind of skewing the Apple Arcade games to be like more robust, spend more time with type real games, but that are just really optimized well for like interesting touch gestures and stuff like that, stuff that's really unique with touch. Yeah. But not necessarily something that you have to play in like 30 second bits or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm super, super curious about how that aspect is going to work out. I don't know, because it's interesting. Like, is it maybe even in the display of the games, all this would seem kind of on Apple. It would be like, oh, this game is best on iPhone, or this game is best on Apple TV or whatever, even though you can play it everywhere. Yeah. So. I don't know.
More questions. A lot of questions.
More questions than answers is the theme of this this keynote, it seems like.
Pretty much. So. Hopefully we get to learn some more soon or whatever. I think at the end of the day, I'm excited about Apple Arcade, and I do want it to be something that really blows the doors off of premium gaming on mobile, making it a more viable thing. But I just don't know if this is the answer. It really is going to depend on how they approach everything, and we just don't know yet. So
The good news is the more people they get in the service, the higher potential there is for someone to spill the beans.
Yeah, I know. Please, somebody, please break the NDA. Just do it.
I mean, that's how we learned about it to begin with someone spilling the beans. Right. So,
yeah.
I guess we'll see.
What are we looking at on time? I wasn't paying attention. Are we good?
So, yeah, we should drive this podcast home.
Oh, I was going to. Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, this will be the Apple Arcade episode.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure we'll talk a lot more about Apple Arcade in the future, too. This is going to be an ongoing
Well, I was curious. Topic. Well, real quick, though, did you play Elder Scrolls Blades at all?
I fiddled with it a little bit, just like to get through kind of like the onboarding more or less. Yeah. Like I didn't get super deep into it. I mean, we played it at, E3 and PAX and all that fun stuff. You know,
so it feels quite different than that demo that we played. I'm not super far into it, but I'm past, like, it takes a few missions before you really get into like the real game part or whatever. I don't know. Yeah. I'm liking it. We should definitely earmark that for next week to talk about it more. I need more time with it anyway.
Yeah, I'd like to spend more time with it because, like, my opinion right now is, like, I think it's cool, and I spent a lot of time reading hot takes on it, and people should probably just sell that.
That's the disappointing thing is, like, I think it's really cool idea for what it is, and I think it's really executed well for what they wanted it to be. So people getting mad that it's not like Oblivion in your pocket, I feel like that's misplaced anger, but what else is new?
I mean, I think this game, like, the magical thing about it so far that I can say is, like, I can't really think of a game that plays, like, equally well in both portrait and landscape, like, so seamlessly.
Oh, dude, totally. And, like, portrait is, like, very one thumb tap to go or whatever, and then when you go to landscape, it lets you use virtual joysticks and it feels more like a normal traditional game or whatever. I thought that was really clever. I don't know if I've ever seen a game do that before.
Yeah, and the way the transition is, like, holy shit, like, this is done so well that everyone's gonna steal this.
Yeah, I hope they do. I that's one of my favorite features of a game is when it can be played in both.
Yeah.
So
I don't know. I mean, I don't have a lot of opinions about it. It's just, I think it's cool. And I've read how the free-to-play system works, which, I mean, seems expected in that, you know, just it's a grindy, unlocky game. Like, that's the way these
things work. I feel like it gives me more a vibe of an idle game than anything else. And, like, a few weeks ago, that game Sprout Idle Garden came out. And wrote it up as the game of the week and stuff. And it's a super awesome game. But one of the things I mentioned was, like, you know, idle games have moved past the point of just being like a UI interface where you make progress bars go up over and over. That was, like, fun for a while, but it's kind of played out now. And so if you want that sort of same sort of, like, idle progression, you have to really dress it up with something more interesting than that. And so in Sprout's case, it's like, cool, you get to build this awesome garden. It's almost like a little city builder in a way. And so you get to show your artistic side by building out your village and your gardens and stuff like that. But you're also just doing this sort of idle progression thing like you always have without even almost realizing it. And I felt very similar about Brewtown, which came out like a year or two ago, which was like an idle game, but built around, like, you know, starting your own brewery. It was almost like a really light simulation game. And I feel like Blades is giving me, like, the idle gaming vibes of, like, this is an idle game with just progress bars and, you know, goals to achieve, but it's dressed up in this dungeon crawler sort of adventure thing that is actually really fun. But it gives you that cool, like, feeling of, like, making, you know, progress bars go up and achieving new levels and unlocking new stats. And I guess that's all really inherent to an RPG anyway. Like, that's kind of what ticks, you know, makes people excited about, you know, RPGs and stuff like that. Just very distilled down into this almost like idle game experience in Skyrim dressing or whatever. I think it's cool.
Yeah, I don't know.
I had a hard time going to bed last night because I was like, man, I got to kill these goblins so I can get this quest so I can level up to my next thing and unlock my next perk. You know, it's like I'm already on that treadmill of carrots on sticks or whatever, which maybe that gets old after a week. I don't know. I guess we can talk about it next week.
Yeah, no, I'm going to spend way more time with it so we can do like a real deep dive next week.
Cool.
Into it, so.
Okay, well then let's drive this podcast off the freeway. Thank you so much for listening to us today. As I mentioned at the top of the show, Our website and this podcast is primarily supported through Patreon. So if you like what we do, please consider supporting us at patreon.com/touch arcade. And for everyone that does become a Patreon for even as little as a dollar, you would normally get a video podcast where you get to see the games we're playing and the news that we're talking about and our awesome faces. So I apologize that we don't have one of those this week. The travel situation has made that hard. But we should be back with a normal one next week, I think, right? And of course, if you don't want to do the Patreon thing or just want to support us in an additional way, you can do your Amazon shopping through toucharcade.com/Amazon. And we get a little piece of anything that you would be normally buying through Amazon anyway. And it adds up and can actually help us out quite a bit. And of course, just sharing with your friends that toucharcade.com is the best place to go for all your mobile gaming needs. And following us on twitter.com/toucharcade and twitch.tv/toucharcade. Do we have any other websites?
Basically everything slash
touch any arcade. Domain that you think of, put /toucharcade.
Farmersonly.com/toucharcade.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna make a page there tonight just for fun. So once again, thank you very much for listening, and we will catch you on the next episode of the Touch Arcade Show.